Look up idiot in the dictionary. You know what you'll find?
A picture of me?
No! The definition of the word idiot, which you fucking are!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to I Do Movies Badly, a podcast exploration of my cinematic ignorance. I am your host, Jim Rohner, and despite being an amateur film critic since 2006, I am woefully ignorant of many films, filmmakers, and genres that consensus has deemed important, and thus I have created this podcast to document my journey into cinematic edification. This month, I'm exploring the films of Andrei Tarkovsky, and as recommended by Douglas McCambridge, and this week's episode, I'll be talking about Tarkovsky's 1972 classic, Solaris. And, guys and girls, I don't know, pardon my language, I know I swear on this podcast a decent amount, but not often this emphatically. I don't know what the fuck I watched with Solaris. I know that's weird to say that because one of my comments about Ivan's childhood was that I was expecting something a bit more esoteric and something a bit more inaccessible, or at least something which was a little bit more, I don't know, meditative? I'm not really sure. I was expecting it to be weird and out there and definitely kind of heavy and maybe a little bit cumbersome at times. And so I was prepared for that with Solaris, and yet still, with it being esoteric and with it being inaccessible, with it being kind of cumbersome and laborious at times, I still have no idea what I watched, in the sense of, I don't like saying that I don't get a movie. Partially because saying that I don't get a movie means that there is only one meaning or interpretation that could be derived from it. The filmmaker only intended for one thing, and you're either on board with that thing or you are not on board with that thing. And while I will say that I don't necessarily believe that's the case, or I at least believe that due to societal and artistic and other certain circumstances and environments that affect both the filmmaker and the viewer, you can have a different interpretation rather than what was intended, and that can be completely valid for you as an audience member. I fully agree with that, but I also have to, I can't even concede, I have to admit, Tarkovsky was doing something with this film, but I have no idea what he was doing with it. And so if there was anyone out there who has seen Solaris before and is familiar with this podcast and sort of me bloviating for 45 minutes to an hour, maybe you were thinking to yourself, great, good, Solaris. Like, I want to see what Jim has to say about Solaris, because I have no idea what I think of this movie. I have no idea what Tarkovsky was thinking of this with this movie. So I want to hear what Jim has to say, because maybe he can edify me. Maybe he can bring me into light. Maybe he can have something intelligent and insightful to say. And if that was your thought at all, let me stop you now, because you are going to be severely disappointed. I am as baffled by this film as you are, if not more so than you are, because this film exists in the Criterion Collection. This film is now streaming on Filmstruck. This film is clearly a very important, significant film. It's on Roger Ebert's list of great movies. It's got, I think, a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. People love this movie. This movie has stood the test of time, and I'm not saying I don't understand why people love it. I'm just saying I don't understand anything about it. I don't understand what Tarkovsky was trying to do with it. I don't understand certain directorial choices he made. I don't understand certain dialogue choices. I don't understand the motivations behind this movie. Even after reading about it today, even after reading on it, on its background and how it was an adaptation and how the author of the book was very upset with Tarkovsky's adaptation and how it was censored by Russians, because all of Tarkovsky's films were censored by Russians until he was eventually forced into exile. I read all that sort of stuff, and I still don't really understand the motivations, the backgrounds, the goals to Solaris, because it is, in my opinion, a laborious movie to get through. I will say, in context, since I took this pause, I should also introduce my co-host again, Bubble Guts. Bubble Guts is here, gurgling hot air into my apartment for some reason. It's really not that cold outside, but I will say, in context of my viewing of Solaris, it was foolish of me to do so. Doug was very clear that I should not watch this movie at a point where I would be more inclined to not pay attention. That I should watch it when I'm at the peak of my mental sharpness, when I am ready to devote my full attention to it. So, of course, I waited until 8:15 on a Sunday night at the end of a very long week in which I was traveling, in which I was getting back to work, in which I was going through a plethora of emotions, mostly good, some bad, but in which my brain was going through a lot. And so, of course, I sat down. Oh, also, I started working out in the morning last week. I started getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to drag my butt to the gym before the sun is even up. And so all of that was contributing into this horrible amalgamation of being unprepared to partake in a 2 hour and 47 minute esoteric Russian film about grief and a sort of pendulum swing in the opposite direction of what Stanley Kubrick was trying to do with 2001. And I'll be honest with you, I nodded off about 3 or 4 times watching this movie, and I don't mean to say that I think this is a bad movie. Who am I to say that Andrei Tarkovsky made a bad movie? What I will say is I don't think I was necessarily in the right mindset to pay this film the attention it probably required, but that also, because of a number of reasons, Tarkovsky's background, where he was making films from, the time he was making them, whatever influences gathered together to ultimately form the equation, the answer of which was Solaris, I don't understand that equation, so I don't understand the answer to it. There's not a whole lot of stuff that I responded to in Solaris. There wasn't a whole lot of stuff that resonated with me or that stood out as particularly relevant to my life and to my experience. But this is a podcast that I have hosted now for over 2 years. I have had experiences, I've seen other films, I've developed opinions, and I know that it won't cut it just making an episode just extrapolating on how I don't understand this movie. That's unfair to you, that's unfair to the art that Tarkovsky made, that's unfair to all the people that have come along before and love this movie. And so I realized I have to kind of make an episode out of this, and so what I figured I would do, and like I said at the top of the show, I'm not going to help you understand this movie at all. I don't know if anything that I'm about to say in this following episode is going to help you understand anything better than you did before you watched it, or after you watched it. But what I will at least try to do is talk about certain ideas that struck me as interesting, or at least that just stood out to me as, even if they weren't meant to be present in Solaris, at least things that me, or that me as a receiver of the art through which Tarkovsky was the vessel, how did I respond? What did I see that I gotta be honest, that I won't say that I thought was great or that necessarily caught my eye, but at least that it's something that I saw that spoke to some type of universal truth that seemed relevant to me, despite the fact that I'm watching this over 40 decades, 40 decades, wow, over 4 decades after it was made, that goes across a language barrier, a cultural barrier, a financial barrier, artistic barriers. There's a lot of references in this movie to Tolstoy and Cervantes and Andrei Rublev and Martin Luther, and they're all there, I'm sure, for a reason, and Tarkovsky was a very artsy guy. He was raised in that environment, but I don't understand what he's doing with those references. I don't know why those things are significant. I don't know, right? I don't necessarily understand what is supposed to shift in my brain or in my spirit or my heart when there's the chromatic shifts in this, when it goes from color to black and white, and when it goes to color to sepia. I'm not sure what that's supposed to signal to me. And I don't know why this movie is so long. Why couldn't you have cut out 20 or 30 minutes of this movie? I don't know a lot of those things. I don't understand what makes Tarkovsky tick. And I can't watch Solaris and give you a picture of what Tarkovsky was like as a person. I just can't do that. I don't understand the things that he did. But what I can do is engage with an art form created by a person that believed in some universality of truth. I'm talking with a capital T here. Or believed that art had some type of purpose and he meant to serve that purpose. And he, 4 decades later, served it to me. So what I can do is at least say, you were trying to tap into a universal truth. Here's what I see in this piece of art about the universal truth that you see. Here's the part of it. If you want to kind of think about it it's a weird old metaphor, but that idea of you get a bunch of blind people together and they're grabbing different parts of an elephant, and they're all trying to describe what the elephant is based on grabbing different parts, the trunk, the leg, the tail, the abdomen area. Tarkovsky maybe has his elephant named Solaris, and there's sort of one part of it that I can kind of see, and I'm like, well, I kind of see this. And so I guess I'll just sort of describe that. Start talking about that, I guess. Which is what are the universal truths? What are the themes? What are the ideas that I saw in there? Whether they're inherent in it or not, whether it's just something that I'm pulling from it or not, I don't think that necessarily matters. But here's the truth that I pulled from watching Solaris, and hopefully you're still listening after I've given you a few minutes of reasons to completely discredit everything that I'm about to say. But if I had to venture a guess at the sort of what the hypothesis is behind Solaris, yes, it's an exploration of grief and what grief has, what effect that has on you. But I also think that Tarkovsky might be trying to say something about the otherness. I'm talking with a capital O here, but the otherness of, or the otherness, or the sort of the fluid nature of the spirit, or at least that there's something outside or separate from objectivism. And I mean, I think a lot of this is sort of just like an essay has a thesis at the beginning, and it's, you know, sort of the introduction of the essay. I see this sort of introduction, the thesis of this film is that first, 10, 15, 20 minutes when we meet Chris, when he's at his father's house, when he is surrounded by nature. And I think there's some absolutely gorgeous cinematography there this one shot in particular where Chris is standing in a field and sort of just surrounded by wild growth, and off in the distance you can see it's getting very foggy, and it's a beautiful shot, and that's combined with these beautiful shots of flowing water, a river or a stream under which there is these long plant life that are just kind of swaying back and forth rhythmically with the flowing of the water, and there's something peaceful and ethereal and, like I said, fluid and just kind of ever moving. The plants have no choice. They have to give in to the flow of the water. The kids have no choice. They have to give in to the fact that they're getting soaked when the sudden rain comes. You know, there's something that is, I don't want to say malleable, but spirit sort of, this otherness, this sort of thing which is outside of objectivism, and I guess objectivism primarily kind of takes the form of science, I guess, in this, but I think it also takes the form of bureaucracy. And I'm not saying that I think Solaris is an anti-science film. I think it's just saying there are certain things outside of quantification and objectivity that not fill in the gaps, but that sort of go along with how things change, with how analysis change, with how interpretations and perspectives and moods change. You know, like, I don't even know. But I guess just getting back to this nature summit, and it sort of, this sets it up, you know, there's a, there's definitely a mood and a gloom and a tone, and you do get the sense that whatever Chris is going through, which of course turns out to be the death of his wife, which is still consuming him, you know, kind of 10 years later. Yes, he is consumed by that, but you get the, but here in the beginning when it's wide open and he's in nature, I think there's something which this science, this mission, this objectivity is sort of interfering with this atmosphere. I mean, his father kind of describes him in a derisive manner, sort of saying, like, he's been like an accountant the whole time. And you have this objectivity, this idea of something which is, you know, accountant deals with numbers, deals with hard facts and equations and math. And that's brought up and that's used to describe Chris in sort of a negative manner. You know, it's almost sort of like he can't, you know, he's so consumed with something that he can't see this environment that he's in. And there's something that's a little tongue-in-cheek and a little bit humorous about when they're watching Burton's video of his interview that he gives when he gets back from Solaris, and he's trying to describe something which is indescribable. You know, he's describing to us the fact that he saw a childlike figure emerge from the watery body of Solaris. And he's giving you visual terms to describe it, but it's like listening to his tone and seeing how his face drops. It's sort of like someone trying to describe to you what about a song resonated with them, or what about a painting, and the bureaucrats are kind of trying to quantify it and hammer it out and dissect it, and just like, oh, do you mean like this or what about like that, and there's that kind of trying to objectify it and categorize it, but then there's this other scientist who steps in and says we have to study it more, and there's this ethereal kind of thing that Burton is trying to describe, and people just don't seem to be able to understand what he's saying, and how they try and respond to it is, how do we categorize it? How do we quantify it? And then the scientist just says, let's study it more to figure it out. When the surface of Solaris, the waters of Solaris, the whatever it is about Solaris, which I think it's kind of, no, which I guess maybe you can derive that Solaris is sort of supposed to be a stand-in for a godlike character, but let's quantify and explain this thing which cannot be easily explained and does not respond the way that stimuli would normally respond in some type of scientific or objective experiment. As evidenced by the fact that when the humans in Solaris start fucking with Solaris by sending radiation to it, that's when it seems like the manipulations, or I should say the manifestations started. That's when people started seeing people from their past appear. That is a situation that Chris finds himself in. When he gets there almost immediately, he sees a manifestation of his ex-wife who killed herself 10 years ago because of a poison he accidentally left behind when he left her. And, oh, before I move on, and the one thing that I think there's this scene, you know, like I said, this nature, there's this flowing water, there's sort of a reverence in this opener, and it is juxtaposed with this driving scene, this scene of Burton driving back to Russia, which is actually Tokyo, but driving back through Russia, and it's modern, and there's skyscrapers, and there's cars, and there's this cacophony of noise on the soundtrack, which is just, it's grating to the ears, and it's almost kind of like this thing of this conflict between this kind of fluid and flowing and nature-y thing which exists outside of this city, which is manufacturing and industry and science and cars and noise, and that comparison, just how those scenes are cut together, stood out to me as there has to be some significance to this because of how jarring it is that these two things are next to each other. Now, I also read that it was, I guess, from the production, it was kind of a bitch to organize that part of the shooting, and so they had to throw that sequence in because they felt like they had to, because they spelt excuse me, they spent so much time and money on it. And I'd like to think that Tarkovsky is not that petty. That he seems like a guy who's only going to include something because it has to be included in a movie which is 2 hours and 47 minutes long. If there's anything that could have been cut out, it's that scene of Burton driving back to the city. But it's there, and it's loud, and it's black and white, and it's different from what we have seen before, and I think that has to be there for a reason. And so once again, getting back to this idea of how sort of the spirit kind of stands apart from objectivism, once Chris gets to Solaris, there's that video message that he watches from his friend, whose name has escaped me at this point, but his friend sort of tells him right away, what you're going to experience, it's not madness. And what is madness but a qualifier or a way to categorize or a way to, for some type of system of explanation? You know, what is madness? It is a psychological condition. It is something which can be explained, broken down, and treated. You know, he says it's not madness. It's something to do with a conscience. And conscience is something which is so much harder for human beings to explain or to grapple with. You sort of have madness or insanity or a mental condition or something which can be treated with medication, with therapy, but something that can be explained versus no, this is something that has to do with conscience, which is what is consciousness? Did I say consciousness? What is the conscience? What is that? You know, guilt, emotions, those are things which are harder to explain or quantify. Chris has some type of line later on, which is, you know, he can say that, you know, we can say that we feel love, but we can't explain what love is. Trying to explain what love is, trying to explain to someone who's never experienced it before, you can, you know, there's an intangible factor. There's something where you can say like, oh, I love being with this girl because we have a terrific sense of humor and yeah, she's a great kisser and we have a whole lot of things in common and we just click and you know, you can list bullet points of things and then someone else can say like, yeah, I get it, but how is that different from anybody else? But love is the thing that sort of fills in the gaps there or is a kind of the spine that holds it together. Love is sort of the spirit that fills in these objective bullet points that gives a flesh to them. It's sort of like Burton trying to explain to the bureaucrats what he saw on Solaris. And there also has to be some type of connection between the churning, the flowing atmosphere of Solaris. It seems like, and I can't point to specific examples, but it seems like any time there was a cut to the planet, to the clouds kind of moving, or to the surface waters just like churning and turning, that it was in conjunction with something significant emotionally that was happening with Chris. That whenever there was something with him in, the subtitles on the movie that I watched on Amazon said Harry, H-A-R-I, was his wife's name, but IMDb credits her as Carrie, K-H-A-R-I. Now, if there's anyone listening to this podcast who is from Russia, or originally is in Russia now, can help shed some light on that in terms of pronunciation and spelling and why those two things seem so different but are referring to the same character, please let me know as to what the etymology is behind that, but when there was something happening specifically with his wife, it just seemed like it would cut back to the planet, almost as though it was sort of the planet was not responding to what happened, but it was sort of something would happen, then it would cut back to the planet as though Solaris is responsible for what's happening, for all of this that's happening. And we kind of see how the mindset of Chris moves from at the beginning of the film to some type of objective observation. He is there on Solaris, remember, to kind of determine, should we shut this station down? Should we shut this research down? Or is there validity in keeping it going? And so that's what he is there for. And even when his wife first appears, he does say, at least I believe with the first iteration of her appearing, like, something like she's not real, or she's not really here, or she's not human. Something which is like in standing back and taking an objective look and kind of saying, like, okay, this is not a person. This is just some type of manifestation of whatever Solaris is doing. And so he puts her on a rocket and shoots her into space, which I found a little funny. But then as it keeps going, when she comes back and when she starts to learn, quote unquote, to be more human, when it seems like she is becoming more human, we see his mindset, we see his perspective, we see his mood shifting from that of the objective observer to the subjective involved. Near the end, he is very much in the throes of guilt and or love for his wife. He recognizes what he did to her, and he's very much in love with her. He feels guilty for what he did, and he tries to make it up to her, especially when he sees that second one, when he leaves and she plows through that iron door to try and get to him, and she's cut up and she's bloody, and he kind of sees what he is responsible for. There's something tangible in front of him. Here are the consequences of your actions. We see that start to affect him emotionally. And we see how that negatively affects him. How, despite the fact that there is an objective truth of this is not your wife, this is not a person, he begins to fall back into emotional traps anyway. And I was reminded of two ideas when I saw this, when I saw his story unfolding. I was reminded of two concepts. The first one is not my own. The first one is, of course, postmodernism. And how, not that I would say that Solaris is a postmodern film, although I suppose an argument could be made for that. I'm not going to make that argument right now because I did not prepare that argument. That at least how Solaris typifies a postmodern attitude in its approach to technology specifically, in regards to the simulacra or the simulation of the thing that was real, you eventually are interact with it so much, engage with it so much, are exposed to it so much that the simulation becomes more real than the real thing. The real thing is the grief and the guilt that Chris is dealing with. And because he sees, I guess, a way to make up to his wife for it, she becomes real to him because she becomes a way for him to work through that or to make up for what it was he does, even to the point of, I believe, and once again, I apologize, guys, but I nodded off a few times in this movie. But I believe that he is at least willing to stay on the space station with her and never leave her, even though she is not real. But she becomes real to him because of the emotional depths that he finds himself plummeting to. Because of, hypothetically, the second concept that occurred to me, one of which occurred to me when I was in college and I was never really able to flesh it out. And I'm not saying this is my idea. I'm sure other people have thought of this before. But as far as I know, no one's written it down in any type of academic way or philosophical way. But an idea that always intrigued me, but I never really worked out how it would work, is this idea of a version of hell where you get everything you want. And maybe that has to do with you get everything you want, but not on your terms. Or maybe it is strictly the sense of you get everything you want. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't fleshed out this idea. But that was also the idea that occurred to me, that maybe he's plummeting these emotional depths because he is living in a hell in which he is given everything he wants. And maybe it's this idea of, like, everything he wants, but it's not everything he needs. What does he need to get over his grief? What does he need to get over his guilt? What he doesn't need is a version of his wife, which is sort of the anti-feminist version of a human that cannot survive without him, that is terrified when he's gone, that needs him to be there at every moment, that is sort of feeding him everything that he thinks he wants until eventually she starts developing into a person who realizes that she can be on her own and that and how she's having an adverse effect on him after she has dug up all these things within him, or I should say after Solaris has read his mind and found out what he wants, has given that to him, and then that thing starts plumbing these emotional depths and he starts becoming attached to her again until she eventually develops to such a point where she realizes it is not good for me to be around him, further destroying him by then destroying herself. That sounds hellacious to me. Because that's what he thought he wanted, and it's destroying him. Or at least making things much worse for him. Outside of that, I don't know how else to respond to things in this movie. There's plenty of interactions between him and the other scientists. At this point, nothing which is really standing out to me. And once again, that's not because I'm saying that this is a bad movie. Oh, the ending, I suppose. Okay, so there is an ending, which obviously sort of makes you revisit and reinterpret everything that you've seen before, in which Chris is back on Earth with his father after on the space station they send these other thought waves or radio waves or something into Solaris, which seems to make the manifestation stop. Then Chris decides his mission is over. He returns to Earth only to see that there's something weird because his father is not responding to being literally rained on inside the house. His father comes out inside the house. Chris kind of collapses into his arms in a pose, which I am told is a painting for the, I believe it's called The Return of the Prodigal Son. And the camera kind of pans out and we see that Chris is not actually home, but he is in he is outside of a manifestation of his father's house on an island in the ocean of Solaris's atmosphere. So it sort of makes you rethink everything you just saw, and so thinking, one, you know, what I first started thinking was, oh, maybe he never did leave Solaris. Maybe that final conclusion when he says, oh, my mission is done here, I can go back home, maybe that's just the manifestation, that's what Solaris wants him to believe is happening. Or maybe that's what he wants to believe is happening, so Solaris makes it so. But then I also started thinking, well, but wait, maybe this entire thing was him on Solaris. Maybe, you know, him at the very beginning was still him on Solaris, before he even, quote-unquote, left for Solaris. Maybe that was still him on Solaris, and it makes you revisit and rethink everything. And my interpretation is, yes, he has willed a story for himself in which he has come to terms with his wife's death. So he says, I can go home now. And he is supposedly at home, but what he is actually in is in a manifestation of him coming to terms with it and a manifestation of him then returning home because he never actually reconciled and came to terms with the grief and the guilt over the death of his wife, indirectly because of him. That's what I thought of the ending. I don't necessarily like or even agree with that because, I can't think of anything else, but if Solaris is supposed to be a stand-in or a something which is supposed to represent an other, something which is spiritual, something which is outside ourselves, then that means that God is cruel. I think. And it also, I don't want to say it doesn't fit with a story arc of what Chris has gone through, but I think instead it just sort of signals then the entire thing was just him descending further and further down. And that makes for a depressing 2 hours and 47 minutes of watching. So that's the ending that made sense to me. But then if that's the case, whether it's trying to say that there's something cruel about this godlike figure, or whether it's just saying that this is a guy who starts out at the bottom and just descends. Either way, I've arrived at a conclusion, which this is a movie I don't want to watch again. Because it's a movie that doesn't really have much that says to me that it's valid. And that's a rough word. Because I don't want to say that it's invalid in the sense of it has no meaning, it is worthless. That's not what I'm saying. But whatever it seems like Tarkovsky is saying with Solaris, maybe it's because I missed something, or many somethings, but it doesn't seem to have too much validity for me. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have worth, because Solaris, considering it's in the Criterion Collection, considering you can still stream it on Filmstruck, considering it was one of Roger Ebert's great movies, considering it has a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, considering that this movie has been able to survive the test of time and influence other filmmakers, means that it does have validity to someone else. And it may have validity to you. And just because it doesn't to me, I'm not going to declare something meaningless or bad. Because that's what art is supposed to be. That's what art does, is it talks to different people and their different periods of life or where they are socially or culturally. You know, I may be standing in front of this elephant and I'm pulling on its tail. I'm like, well, this thing is kind of flimsy and I don't really have a use for this thing. But then someone else might be, being lifted up by the trunk and, thrown up and down in the sky, and it's having a grand old time saying, like, this is great, I totally have a use for this. And that's fine. It's an elephant one way or another, but it just has some type of significance or meaning for one person and significance or meaning in a different way for someone else. But those are just sort of the thoughts that I had with Solaris. Once again, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm not saying it's a meaningless movie. I'm just saying it is a movie that I'm not sure what I was supposed to get out of it. And the things that I did get out of it, the things that I did find kind of stuck with me, are not enough that this movie is going to get stuck in my mind, are not enough that later on I'm going to revisit this movie. And those are sort of my thoughts on Solaris. And now, I'm sure there might be someone out there who's listening to me like and saying to themselves, oh my god, this guy is an idiot. He missed this. Why didn't he pick up on this illusion? When he shot this thing, it was clearly supposed to mean that and not what this guy is saying. Cool, awesome. I would love for someone to point that stuff out to me. Or I would love to hear what this film meant to you, or what it stood for you, or maybe how it helped be cathartic for you, or helped you understand something. I would love to hear that. I still don't know if that would do anything for me, in my opinion of the movie, because that would just be me understanding your subjective experience. Whereas my subjective experience was, it failed to capture my attention. It was not an ideal viewing for a sleepy mind. And it's sort of a pretty long downer of a story. That's what I got out of it. And I'm not saying that's the end all and be all. Yes, it's my podcast, but if you're listening to this, it's clearly because you are curious about my opinion of it, because you also have an opinion of it. Ugh. This was a long one, I'll be honest with you. I'm still holding out hope for The Mirror. I guess if nothing else, I've heard it's got some absolutely gorgeous cinematography, so I'm certainly always curious to see just a beautiful piece of visual media. Solaris, if you haven't revisited it, and you want to revisit all of its 2 hour and 47 minute glory, it is free to stream if you have a subscription to Filmstruck. I don't think I mentioned this with Ivan's Childhood. Ivan's Childhood is also free on Filmstruck if you have a subscription there. Otherwise, you can check out Solaris for rental and purchase on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and Vudu as well. So, easy enough to get your hands on this ambitious film. I've talked about this plenty of times in the past and always said to people, like, oh, of course I want to hear what you have to say. Email me at youdomoviesbadly@gmail.com. But ladies and gentlemen, please, 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 someone out there who loved this movie, write me an email. It's youdomoviesbadly@gmail.com. Write me a movie and tell me why you loved this movie. Not because I want to have an argument with you, but because I want to understand you, and I want to understand this film better, and I want to... Every movie that I watch, I want to love. Because clearly enough people have loved this, and it has added enough value to some people's life that it has withstood the test of time, that it has continued to be an important or respected film. And I want to know what you responded to in this movie. Not out of pretension or to be condescending, but because I'm curious. I am curious and I want to learn. And I want to learn from this piece of art because I'm not responding to Tarkovsky like I thought I would. And I would like to kind of get to the root of why that is. So I want to hear from you. YouDoMoviesBadly@gmail.com. You can leave comments on the Facebook page. Just go to Facebook. Find I Do Movies Badly. Tweet at me at Nolan Fixes Teeth on Twitter if you so wish. If you want to catch up on back episodes of I Do Movies Badly, easy enough to do that through iTunes. Just go search for I Do Movies Badly. Please leave a comment. I would love if you left a comment. Or you can go to battleshipretention.com, go to the podcast drop-down menu, find I Do Movies Badly, and you can get all my back episodes there, and also you can leave comments on those episodes as well. So, whew, that's Solaris. Hopefully I had something in there that made sense to you people, because after Ivan's Childhood, I was really concerned about doing this episode because I thought, I can't do a second episode in a row in which I talk a lot but don't say anything. And hopefully, even if I didn't edify you in any way, even if I didn't help make this movie any clearer, at least you understand where I'm coming from, what I'm saying, and you understand this film in the context of me, or at least me in the context of this film a little bit. Next week, I am going to be wrapping up the month of January, and that means wrapping up Andrei Tarkovsky with his 1975 film, The Mirror. So I guess be sure to tune in next week where I'll be wrapping that up. And well, hopefully I'll be just a little bit less ignorant and a little more awake.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.